Please go ahead.
Thank you very much, Sarah. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is the DSSA call on the 23rd of August 2012. On the call today, we have Mikey O'Connor, Georgia Sarasaki, Olivier Crépin-Leblanc, Cheryl Langdon-Hall, Lim de Gazelle, Takeyasu Matsuo, Julie Hammett, Katrina Sataki, Don Blumenthal, Jim Galvin, Jacques Latour, Warren Kumari, Mark Costas, and Jörg Schweiger. We have an apology from Rick Keller. And from staff, we have Julie Headland and myself, Natalie Peregrin. I'd like to remind all participants to please state their names before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and over to you, Mikey.
Thanks, Natalie, and welcome all. Let's see. First up, the agenda is really short today. We're just going to work on our roles, responsibilities, gaps, overlaps stuff like we did last time. And so first momentary pause is if there's anything that somebody would like to put on the agenda, this would be a good time to do that. And then also if anybody's got any changes to their statements of interest, we'll do that pause. Cool. Well, let me replay the bidding a little bit from the last call. Essentially, what we started working on is our first big chunk of work between now and Toronto, which is to fill out that diagram. This is the diagram that we started with in the report. And what we've concluded is that the thing to do now is populate this diagram with organizations that do this kind of stuff, figure out who's out there doing these things. And at one point, I came up with a really terrible idea, which was to do a poll, but Bart straightened me out on that one. And so our current scheme is to essentially flesh out this diagram until we're happy with it, or at least happier with it than we were, and then do some desk research to sort of figure out on our own who fits where on this diagram. And once we've built that as a first try, contact all the people that we've placed on the diagram and ask them whether we did this right and let them correct it. So what we did last week is we started working on improving this diagram because Julie Hammer started us off on this and pointed out that there's a diagram, the orangey stuff, and there's or the hexagonal stuff, and then there's a table. And those don't really align. So Julie did the first pass on this and pointed out the different parts that are on each of the two things and said, see, these things don't quite line up. And so we started working on that. And I went ahead after our meeting between last time and this time and drew a new version of the diagram. And I've made a bunch of changes, so let me walk you quickly through those to let you know what I did so that you can start taking aim and offering course corrections. First of all, what I did is I've gotten rid of the stupid hexagonal stuff because when you start adding more stuff around the edge, you start getting into drawing incredibly complicated geometric shapes. It took me the better part of 2 hours to draw a 10-sided version of the hexagon, and I decided that was not a good plan because if somebody added one more, then I'd have to draw an 11-sided diagram. And so we are now to circles, which gives us the opportunity to put as many things around the outside as we want, which I think is pretty cool. Taking advantage of that, I took the things that were in the little orangey table that weren't in the diagram and started arraying them around the edge. And so what you're seeing is more stuff, more kinds of activities, more functions arrayed around the edge of the diagram for us to think about. So over on the right are the sort of things that we started with, like risk planning, risk assessment, compliance monitoring, event monitoring. That's sort of the same as the right side of the hexagonal diagram, but there's a little more granularity in there. One of the things that I split apart was compliance monitoring and event monitoring. And part of the reason I did that is because of I think I sent this to the whole list. The questions and answers from the DNS RMF project included a reference to something like COBIT, one of the big sort of security audit frameworks. And I thought, oh, it'd be probably good to introduce the idea of compliance monitoring versus event monitoring. So I split those monitoring things apart. Then I took, you know, on the old diagram, I sort of had everything that was actually doing stuff clumped into one segment. Frontline mitigation, you know, actual technology stuff, operational practices, incident response. So all this stuff over here was kind of clumped into one bucket. And so I split those apart a bit. And then I also sort of split research and analysis out a little bit as another more granular thing to think about. So that's another change that I made. And then the last change that I made is I added a whole new set of descriptions to the edge glue core thing, just to sort of make the distinctions clearer to what's going on. And part of the reason I did that is because of sort of a theme that's begun to emerge on the ops calls that I wanted to pull into this conversation, which is especially in the area of kind of coordination and sharing. There was a pretty strong theme in the comments on the DNS cert idea that ICANN brought up. There was a pretty strong negative reaction to ICANN doing a DNS cert. But when people wrote those comments, a lot of times they talked about how helpful it would be for some more vehicles to coordinate and share ideas and so on and so forth. And so I kind of wanted to pull that distinction into this drawing. Now, I need to stop at this point and make the standard disclaimer, which is to say, under no circumstances should somebody think that ICANN is getting ready to do all this stuff. This is really our attempt to map the security, stability, resiliency ecosystem and figure out who lives where in this ecosystem, so that we can figure out if there are any gaps and overlaps. So that's kind of the story. I think I'll stop at this point and just see if there are any questions, comments. Oh, York's got a question in the chat. I'll start with that. That'll give the rest of you time to think of questions. Jorg asks, how do you define compliance monitoring in our context? And here's my try at an answer, Jorg. You have to understand that I'm making this up as we go, so this could be a really bad answer, but let me give it a try and see what you think. I was thinking about a lot of these things that we might see you know, if you think of our sort of segments on the pie, we might see a lot of dots in the delivery edge organization part of this. And so my guess would be that for the most part, individual organizations would do their own compliance monitoring. I think we get into really interesting territory if we were to try to put together a proposal where there was some single or central organization that was responsible for compliance monitoring across the whole ecosystem. That's just my view. We could certainly change that. But at the same time, I think what reminded me of this is that if indeed a model like COBIT comes through in the DNS-RMF project, we need to at least acknowledge that a lot of those security management models include compliance monitoring. So better to put it in here now and have a conversation about the appropriate place and the appropriate people than leave it out. Jim's in there with, isn't the public an important part of compliance monitoring? Jim, do you want to expand that a little bit? That's an interesting idea. Jump on the call and speak.
Yeah, out. No, I'm just making an observation that I don't think that you can monitor everything, you know, from a department point of view, if you will, right? I mean, sometimes someone is supposed to be serving the public, and you can't really monitor that because you're not actually, as a monitoring organization, you're not actually executing on those services. So you depend at least in part on getting complaints, getting reports, and analyzing that and assessing that you've got a pattern, and then you have to reach out and do something about it. So just putting that out there as being a part of, you know, what a compliance monitoring process includes.
That's really tasty. I'm going to just screw up your screen for a minute because I got to go over and yank my notes out from underneath.
While you're fiddling around with the computer screen, Mikey, may I interrupt you? Your
yeah, go
transcript?
Ahead. This is your.
I'm not buying it. And I think I know what compliance means, and I think probably even COBIT would refer to compliance in a way that political compliance is meant, the compliance of behavior of the management is meant. Well, loads of associations with respect to compliance, but compliance in the context of security, well, I'm still trying to figure out what that could mean, and I wasn't too satisfied with your answer. Would you want to give it a second try, or anybody else?
Well, let me first do the textbook answer. So in a traditional, and Don and some of you other guys who are actually knowledgeable about this, feel free to chime in. But in a security context, one of the things that generally happens is that, you know, I'll go back to the higher education context that I built a lot of this stuff in. There are standards and so on that are expected in terms of controls, et cetera, et cetera. And in our 50-campus university context, there were minimum standards that the universities themselves agreed needed to be in place. And then they also agreed that they would essentially conduct periodic audits to make sure that those controls indeed were in place. And that's compliance monitoring. It's compliance to an external standard. Well, right, and there's Jacques saying for an enterprise you can have payment card industry, credit card, or SOX, Sarbanes-Oxley compliance with defined controls and actions or events. The internal security compliance, you can comply with internal security policies. You need a security policy to comply with in order to have compliance. But once you have one, then now it's Mikey speaking again. Once you have one, then it's fairly common to have a compliance function that goes and checks to make sure that that stuff is in place.
So this is Warren. I guess it all sort of comes down to what is it that you hope to accomplish from these audits. I mean, for many of the audits or compliance functions, they exist to move or to indemnify various people who's going to be liable around. So, I mean, I've gone through SOX, PCI, like two of the ISO things, and did all the compliance stuff. And I don't think in any way they were useful from a security standpoint. They were useful because now we have a piece of paper that says that we've done them, and they're useful because now we have something that, you know, says we can continue processing credit cards. But I don't think they actually changed anything in any of the organizations I worked for. From a security standpoint, I mean, if your security is poor enough that the PTI stuff is going to find something, your security is horribly broken. Sorry, I've got a slight rant here. It's just I've been through a number of times with a number of auditing organizations. And the only thing I could ever see that came out of that that was useful was if something bad happened, we now had somebody that we could point at and say, but we did the compliance function. Look, we at least tried. Sorry, big rant here there.
No, it's a not uncommon conversation in my life. I've spent a lot of time in this world, and I'm not sure that I actually want to solve this discussion today.
Fair enough.
I do want to acknowledge, though, that some of the organizations that we're going to identify, for example, the registries, most of the big registries. Have we got, who's on the call today? We got any of the, well, Jim's here.
Jim Gilpin.
Yeah. Jim, you guys probably are subjected to a bunch of these, PCI and so on and so forth. Don't you guys have to do, and what I was thinking is that an organization like Afilias would be a good example of a dot at the edge where Afilias probably does compliance monitoring already. And I'm not in any way saying that it should go at the core. I'm just saying that it does happen in some organizations. Primarily, usually, because of requirements imposed by customers who say, in order for you to be my vendor, you have to be SOX compliant or, you know, ISO 9000 compliant. And in order to be compliant, you have to have monitoring to ensure compliance.
And to indemnify yourself from a number of legal actions, you need to have gone through the compliance thing. But I think that it's potentially worth us acknowledging on the call, probably not in public, but on the call, that this doesn't actually accomplish huge amount, and if it does accomplish a huge amount, then you're sufficiently screwed that you shouldn't be doing it.
So oh, well,
I
yeah.
I can stop talking. I just got a big, it is one of my personal pet rants, so I will.
Yeah, no, that's a Zen discussion. That's all about beer and late at night and maybe two or three beers before we get to the end of that one. But one of the, you know, it's always a kind of a third rail topic. One of the beauties of being a retired guy with nothing at stake here is that I can throw the third rail stuff out without having to worry about electrocution because I'm not grounded. But it is one of the pieces of the pie, and it's not a bad idea to at least acknowledge. The queue is building. Jim, go ahead.
Yeah, so this is Jim Galvin. With respect to compliance monitoring and whether or not, you know, we, the Afilias, do it, and I would imagine this kind of applies to others, I think there's an important distinction to make here. I mean, we have a compliance officer. Yes, they do pay attention to whether or not, you know, we as a service provider are meeting the requirements that, you know, ICANN policies and procedures have placed on us. You know, in addition, insofar as we're the operator and, well, we're the service provider, there's a registry operator, for example, you know, we're going to have a contractual relationship with that operator, too, as well as with ICANN. And, you know, we're going to have a contractual review there to make sure that we're complying with whatever terms we have in that contract. I'm trying to phrase this carefully enough to observe that although we call it compliance, it's really more of a QA function than it is compliance monitoring, I think, in the sense that you mean here, because it's an internal function, not an external one. I mean, when I see compliance monitoring here in this circle, I think, and, you know, maybe this is a point of discussion here, that you want to know that's sort of an external view of compliance. There are third parties who want to know if we're compliant. And that's a different kind of monitoring. It's a different kind of looking at whether or not we're doing what we need to do. I mean, the compliance monitoring that we do is internal only. No one would ever see that. You know, it's not visible unless you are an external touch point of some sort. You know, I mean, ICANN would do compliance monitoring on us. They want to make sure they're getting the reports they're supposed to get from us. You know, that kind of thing. So, you know, when you were suggesting that, you know, we have a view on compliance monitoring, I want to make that distinction. You know, I mean, our view on it is more of an internal one. It's more of a QA function than it is what I think this is. So maybe that's a question.
I think just to take a first cut at it, that you're right. These are two different things. And I think in the next generation of this, there probably ought to be two little blobs because they are two different things. I'll make a little room so that I remember to do that, because, for example, at least in the payment card industry, I think that those are largely done by external audits.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, internal to an organization, there's often a group that is like the one that Jim is describing that's doing assessments and monitoring in the more QA proactive sense. And I think, you know, I think each of them, I really don't want to get into the value statement as to whether they're good or bad. I think that if done well, they're very helpful. If done badly, they become an exercise in filling out checklists and then become subject to Warren's rant. But in terms of what we're doing right now, which is just to figure out who's doing what, I'm not sure I want to get to the bottom of that discussion because that's a deep, long conversation. Let's see. Oh, the queue magically cleared. Okay, anything? I thought that was a very helpful conversation. And so if there are other things to add, there's York. Go ahead, York.
Yeah, I stepped down because you mentioned that you do not want to clarify in detail at this very call, and I think this is okay. So actually, I wanted to make a statement to go a little bit further down in clarification, but I'm going to be satisfied if I know that we still keep on working to make this or to sort this problem out, because I think compliance in this context may be misleading, and the only thing I'm calling for is just to make sure that we define it in a way that we really understand what's meant by it, and we couldn't do that offline. No worries.
Yeah, I'd love that. Actually, one of the things that I think would be helpful to do offline, and maybe try to do it on the list between now and next week's call, is to sort of come up with definitions of all of these things so that, you know, we know that we're all talking about the same thing. So I think that would be really helpful. I think doing it on the call gets tricky. We could pick off like three or four of these at a time and bash through them on the call, but that would take quite a while. And so if we can figure out a way to flesh these out offline, I think that would be neat. Other thoughts? Is this going in the right direction, the wrong direction, craziness? Is Mikey off in the weeds, as he often gets? I'm hoping that the silence is no, it's okay, rather than he's so far in the weeds we don't know how to get him back to the planet.
Hey, Mikey?
Yes, sir, go ahead.
So all the bullets you have on the outside the circles, like risk planning, risk assessment, some of those apply to the core, but not all of them apply to all of the different areas. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. So here's where I'll send you your $50 later. Here's where I was headed with this.
Traveler's check, eh? Don't forget.
Yeah, traveler's check, probably in Canadian rather than in U.S. I think Canadian is a better currency now. What I was thinking is once we've sort of got this figured out, that then what we do is we populate some sort of table where this table gets really big because now there are a whole bunch of organizations listed in each of these cells. So the cells will have to get a lot bigger. This table can't be this size. But my idea was that almost all of these things are likely to be present in a registry organization, for example, because they're going to have to do their own. They're going to have to probably do all of this stuff. But then there are other organizations that aren't delivering the DNS that might have a role on this chart. So my guess, this is totally a guess, is that we'd see registries showing up throughout this column. Because you know, I would guess that they'd have to do all these things. But some of the other entities that we've identified, DNSORG, for example, wouldn't show up throughout the whole diagram. They would just show up in various places, and they might tend to show up more at the sharing and core level. And I think that that's the puzzle we're about solving, which is figuring out all these organizations and figuring out where on this diagram they sit. Does that get to what you were headed for, Jock? You've gotten very silent. Are you muted? Or just in shock? You may be in shock. Is anybody on the call? Maybe I've been dropped off the call.
I'm still here.
Oh, good. Well, right there. Oh, there we go. So, Jacques, was that where you were headed? This rant that I did, or not? Where's Jacques? What
I'm here. I'm not sure.
Not sure?
No.
Well, it's okay. We're early yet. This is the beginning of something. So, you know,
are you supposed to have something on the screen?
Oh, is this? Oh, my screen share fell down. Hold on a minute. I get it. don't know how I did that. Now it should be there. Is it there now?
Yes.
Yes, okay. I still, so this is the table I was talking about. Did you guys see this before I fell down?
No.
Nope.
And then it crashed when you were switching to it.
Oh, okay. So I'll keep an eye on that. I wasn't paying attention. So, Jacques, what I was thinking is that the registries would tend to show up in this column on this table, the edge column, because they have to do all this stuff. But OARC, just to pick on them, they might only show up in a few of these columns.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
And then, you know, so the edge tends to be really populated with people who do work, whereas the glue sharing collaboration layer, there might be people who are really interested in doing that, like DNS OARC, and they might tend to show up more in that layer. And then at the core, it might be a very small group of people. And I think that the interesting puzzle is to sort of figure out who lives where on this chart. But I think a table like that might be the way to do it. And so now you got the full animation effect. Sorry about the dropping on that.
Yes. The answer is yes.
Okay. Cool. Because I think that the table, if I go back to that, is the desk research. I think, you know, once we've got the first, you know, once we've got this list figured out, you know, what are the things that we want to put in the table? And once we've got good definitions for those things, or at least definitions that don't drive people crazy, then I think it's time to put people in these cells, at least as a first try, and then go to them and say, this is our table. What do you think? Is this an accurate depiction of where you and your organization sit, or are we completely crazy? Go ahead, Warren.
Warren again. There is some risk with asking people, is this where you fit? Because a lot of people are going to probably overestimate their importance within the community or within the space, and also overestimate how wide their reach and impact is. So I think that asking people self-classify might get you more of what they would like to be doing slash what they think they can do versus what they actually are accomplishing. I suspect I worded that really poorly.
Well, I think there is a whole series of questions. I think one question is, have we depicted what you do correctly? And sometimes the answer will be, yeah, that's good. And sometimes it'll be, no, we do more things. And sometimes it will be, no, we do less things.
Okay.
Then there will be another question, which is, what do you want to do on this chart? And again, I think the answers may be sometimes, we want to do more things. And other times the answer will be, well, we'd really prefer to do less things. So this is a kind of back and forth conversation, I think, between people. And I think it's perfectly okay for an organization or a representative of an organization to say, well, we do all these things, and for some of the rest of us to say, really? You really think you do blah, blah, blah? We've never been aware of that. Or,
okay. I mean, if we believe that we can, well, that somebody will be able to say, yeah, I don't really believe that you are actually the most important person on the Internet.
Yeah, except for me. The nice thing about me is that I firmly occupy the least important job, so I got my role all figured out. But yeah, I mean, I think that there, and I think that that's one of the really useful things of a conversation like this, is to have a place to have a conversation about roles and responsibilities. Don's in the queue. Go ahead, Don.
If I've gotten a little off track here, is I guess roles with respect to what? I mean, I looked at your table there, and I see a lot of items where a company's rightly going to say, we do that for ourselves.
Right.
But the question is, making clear that we're talking about, do you do it with respect to the large, you know, with respect to your position in the internet?
Somebody's got a phone ringing. Is that your phone, Don? This is
nope.
Giant tone that's coming through. Oop, it stopped. Oh, good. Don, the tone totally obliterated the last half of what you were saying.
I guess it's important to make the distinction on this list when you're talking to any possible respondent is, do the items apply to what the company does for itself as opposed to what the company does
for others
with respect to its larger role in internet security? You know,
right. Well, and I think that at least in this iteration of the chart, the premise is that if you're at the edge, that's part of the reason I added all those words at the bottom of the circles, is that if you're at the edge, you're doing things. So you are PIR, you are doing incident response for PIR. And so that's why I'm expecting to see the registries pretty much all the way around the edge because, you know, I think they have to do this in order, in some form or another. They probably have to do all of these things. I think there are other organizations that do these things for themselves as well. They can live on the edge too. For example, I would say that one of the things that DNS OARC, just to pick on them, does is they do research and analysis. You know, that's part of their mission. And so their doing job, their edge job, is research and analysis. So I would expect them to get a dot at the edge for research and analysis, because it's their mission. Then the next order of business is, okay, how about sharing that stuff? Now, in the case of OARC, again, that's sort of their mission, is to share that research and analysis that they do with other people. But let's go back to PIR. One of the delicate subjects, and, you know, this was part of the confidential information discussion, was, well, how much of that incident response stuff that you do you share with others in the ecosystem, and how do you do it? And, you know, are there good mechanisms for you to do it? So, go ahead, Don.
Part of what I'm getting at is being clear on what we're talking about in the different roles of the company. Sure, PIR is interested in, you know, I'm going to use this as an example. Yeah, we're concerned about incident response, but do we need to share that if the incident response is related to our personnel system as opposed to a problem with the registry system? And I guess I should more accurately say, should we be concerned that Afilias deals with it because they do all the important stuff anyway, and we can just sit back.
Yeah. No, I get that. And I think that we do have to always apply that giant in quotes, the DNS cookie cutter to this. Unless, I mean, I think the one time that you might hop out of the DNS is, let's say that you had a really cool idea to do incident response, and you happen to be using that idea on your personnel system, and you wanted to share that idea. You don't want to share the data. You don't want to share the incidents because they're completely irrelevant to the DNS. But you've got a neat gizmo that you've built that might be helpful for other people doing incident response stuff, and you want to share that idea. That might go into the glue layer. You might say, hey, you know, here's the best practice. We're using it in personnel, so it's, we haven't got any data that we can show you, but it's a neat gizmo.
I agree right down the line here. I guess I'm just suggesting, particularly now that I know we're on the same page, that when the time comes, we need to make those distinctions when we start asking questions.
Yeah, well, and I think that what I'm hearing on this call is that, and I think this is a call I'll have to go through the transcript on because there's no way to take notes on what's being said. It's too subtle. But, you know, one of the things I'm really hearing is that the framework isn't too bad, but there's a lot of texture that doesn't come through yet that needs to be there. Partly so we don't confuse people, and partly so that we don't light incendiary discussions needlessly. Because, you know, this is kind of new ground. And I'm quite cheerful to go ahead and grasp third rails of the electric trolley firmly in my bottom of the bottom-up process role, because if I get electrocuted, it doesn't hurt my career at all. I just have more time to climb the radio tower. But I think that if we can have this conversation, it might be very helpful for the ecosystem to sort of figure out what to expect of each other and what not to expect of each other. And that kind of gets back to Warren's comment, you know, of roles.
Mikey?
John, go ahead.
So the way I see this is that incident response is like compliance. You have internal incident response for your organization, how you deal with stuff internally, and you have external incident response.
Uh-huh.
External is important because if what you have here is that you have multiple edge, you have multiple glue / region, and you have one core, right? So you need to show, let's say somebody from a different continent is attacking .ca. So we're going to have an internal response plan to address that. And then at one point or another, we need to go out of our edge and then reach the regional glue. Like, we're going to go out to the Canadian CSIRT and tell them we're being attacked by so-and-so. These guys, the glue is going to reach a core to say, where is so-and-so, and how do we reach the edge for that region? So you need to go in the core, out the core, and there's multiple entities.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, today we don't have the core incident response, external incident response bucket. That's what's missing.
Wow, that's a good, that's a great comment, and I'm going to have to walk a couple of times around the farm before I figure out how to represent it on this thing. Because I think that in a way, you know, now we're skirting dangerously close to the CERT third rail. You know, that's the function that a lot of people were looking for. And ICANN sort of marched in and said, well, we'll do a CERT. And that did not fly. But at the same time, that would be a really useful thing to have, right?
But today, you know, today we go, if we show this to first is a group of some countries that are trusted, but it's not all of them, right?
Right.
So we have a fragmented core, and somehow we need to show that for two edge in different continents, for two edge that are not trusted, that don't trust each other, for one to reach the other is very complicated because we have a fragmented core.
Mikey?
Warren, I bet. Go ahead.
Yes, well done. So I wasn't going to mention this earlier because it might all be semantics, but you mentioned texture, so I guess I will. In many of the cases, you've been saying things like you think the registry will be around the outside, or the registry will do this, or the registry will do that. In the new regime, I think there are going to be a very large number of the registry does very little, and it's the registry backend. But because you know a lot of registries are going to be outsourcing their stuff, and I think that's going to become more common. So I think we might need to represent, you know, oh, and also obviously the registry backend provider still has contracts with the actual registry, and so there's going to be a lot of what I'm allowed to talk about, what I can share. You know, the registry is not going to have any visibility into it, and isn't really a technical organization. So I think that there need to be sort of more players depicted, and how does the registry backend interact with incident response folk, keeping in mind that they have weird contractual obligations and don't really represent, etc. And I think this is going to end up getting tricky very fast.
Yeah, and I think that one of the ways that we handle the distinction between registry and registry backend is simply by the way we populate this table. Because I think even, I've got too many windows open to do this, but I think in the report we make the distinction between registries and registry backend operators already. But if we don't, we should.
I mean, I think that we might mention it, but...
Yeah.
When the rubber meets the road, I think that there's going to be a lot of, you know, I believe that you have bad info here. Maybe I do, but I can't talk about it because I'm contractually stuck.
Yeah.
Okay. Like rent.
Right. Jacques, is that a new hand you want to jump back in? Or is that the old hand that you started this conversation with?
It's an old one.
Okay. What I want to do, if it's okay with you all, we're getting pretty close to the top of the hour, so this is maybe a reasonable time to sort of begin drawing this to a close, is continue to focus on the list of functions right now to make sure that we've got at least a roughly close to right list. And then once we've got the list of buckets, right. I think that the kinds of conversations like the one that we just had with Jacques and Warren are the ones that we have when we're trying to populate the list. And we can sort of, you know, Warren's little bit right there was a perfect example of, well, okay, who do we put in which bucket in our desk research? And then once that's done, we can go out to the people that we've put in these buckets and say, have we got that right? And I think that the answer is going to come back that some of us do and some of us don't. You know, so some registries do these things and some of them don't. Some registry back-end operators do these things. Some of them don't. I think Jacques' point about the fragmented core is a sort of a fascinating one. But I think that what this at least highlights for me is that this is a very useful conversation for the ecology to have. And I think it's pretty reasonable to set the expectation that we won't necessarily present something that's done. We'll just present something that's well started and say, well, here's a first try, and here are a lot of really interesting questions that have fallen out of it. And keep the conversation going. That's kind of where I'm thinking we're going to wind up anyway. Is the screen blank again? Or is that an old one, Julie?
That's the old one.
That's the old one, okay. Well, anything else? We got a few minutes left, but we could end just a few minutes early, too. If this is close enough, I think what I'm going to try and do is listen to this transcript, listen to the MP3, and drive some of these points into drawings for next time. In the meantime, what would be helpful is if maybe I'll pick on folks like Don. Don, do you feel like this list that's on in the table in front of us, are there like textbook one-paragraph definitions of these that you could just go copy and paste into an email to the rest of us? Is that asking too much? If not, I'll take an action to also try and write a paragraph about each one of these. Because what the part of the confusion that came is, you know, these are sort of the definitions I was using 10 or 15 years ago. I can probably take a lot of this stuff and sort of weave it into a paragraph or two about each of these things to begin to give us a platform to sort of beat this up until it's in shape that we feel comfortable with. But if there's a set of pre-existing wheels out there that I don't need to reinvent, that would be even better. Because then we could say, well, here are the definitions according to blah, whatever the source would be. And that would be a little bit more credibility, I think, than me just doing it on my own. So that's the puzzler I'll leave with you folks between now and next week's call, along with, you know, thoughts on the list about things to add, things to combine. We've added a couple where we've got this internal-external dimension. That's actually a dimension that probably applies to almost every single one of the things here. There's internal standards, tools, and techniques. There's external ones. There's internal training. There's external, et cetera. So I may try to weave that into the diagram somehow in a different way. But this has, at least for me, been very, very helpful. And so the audio isn't working. Is that still the case? Is the AC audio a problem, or is that an old email that just rolled into me? You might want to check that one too, Natalie. Anyway, thanks.
Oh, sorry, Mike. I can't hear you.
Oh, okay. So my audio is going in and out.
I'm joking.
Oh, sorry. It's too early in the morning, Jacques. Don't do that to me. I haven't had any coffee yet. He whines. Anyway, that's it, folks. Thanks a lot. I'll see you in a week.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, bye-bye.
Thanks, Mike.
Natalie, that was fabulous. Bye. Thanks a million.
Bye.
Thank you, Sarah. You now stop the recording.
Thanks, Natalie. Thanks.